Today's daf in Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yudalet. Let's review, even though we did the Mishnah yesterday, let's review that Mishnah once again, right at the bottom. And we've got a Halakha Mishnah. You know, I'm even tempted to ask Richie to at least start off the day. We've missed him so much because he wasn't with us for Shabbos. Maybe. Come on, Sir Richard, give it to us. The Talisker Rebbe has been missing. I can still hear the reverberations of the Talisker Rebbe's davening on Shabbos. Let's at least get the Halakha Mishnah. Beautiful, lovely. All right, so our Mishnah now moves on to begin discussing, along with the Mishnah that follows, which we'll have later today, how exactly we measure a korah. And does the Korah have to be strong, and so on and so forth. So let's just run through it again. The Korah, the Mishnah says, has to be wide enough to get a Ariach on it. Now, an Ariach is a half of a brick. A normal brick, a building brick, is like the modern large building concrete blocks, which are 3 tvachim by 3 tvachim. And if you split it in half, it's 3 tvachim by 1.5 tvachim. And that means that 1 tefach would be enough to hold half of the Ariach, the standard brick. Which the Gemara will ask, I mean, how does 1 tefach hold 1.5 tefach? But we'll get to that. Now, the thing is, it needs to be, says the Tanakhama, it needs to be not only wide, it needs to also be strong. Because, look, the point over here is that it's supposed to be a heker, right? And as a heker, it can't look like it's a fake out. I mean, it has to look like it's construction. So it has to look at least similar to something that is solid enough to make you feel that there's a closure over your mavi, so that you really can feel the difference between the mavi and the shetarabim. So because of that, it can't just be like a puff of smoke. I mean, it's got to be strong enough to actually hold that ariach. It doesn't need the ariach there, but it needs to be able to hold the ariach. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we're only requiring it to be the width necessary. It doesn't literally have to be strong enough. And if it were made out of, let's say, bamboo or reeds or whatever, pretend it's made out of metal. If could it hold an ariach if it were metal? So then we leave it up to you to adjust it. Please mute yourselves. So we leave it up to you to make it, in your mind, strong. That's all. Now, how about if it is crooked? So if it's crooked, you can't really balance anything on it because it's going to fall off. That's okay. That, too, we can say ro'in. So we've got a couple of ro'ins. Ro'in, pretend in your mind, ro'in. Consider it to be metal. Consider it to be straight. How about if it's round? It's a pole that you're using. Can you use a pole? Or do we say, well, pole, you're not going to be able to put anything on, so it's going to fall off. Again, ro'in. Adjust it in your mind. Cut the pole into two or square it off and turn it into a square. So this leads us to an interesting question. What, halachically speaking, what would be the way in which we relate the diameter of a pole to its circumference? So how would we measure this with the, to be accurately, a tefach lahalacha? Well, the rule is that pi equals 3 lahalacha. And so if you're able to measure the circumference, and the circumference of your pole is 3 tefachim, that's the tefach that we're talking about. Now, this is a very important yesod, because as we said yesterday, look, obviously, when the Torah gives us measurements, there is a limit to how accurate those measurements can be. Because, I mean, as we become more and more sophisticated, we're able to get closer and closer measurement. Look at the difference between, say, the tefillin that we have nowadays and the tefillin that were used just a couple of generations ago. I mean, there's absolutely no comparison. Take a look at the tefillin that are found in archaeological sites. I mean, it's a joke compared to our tefillin. Say, what? How did anybody think those were kosher tefillin? Well, that's because the way that we are able to utilize micrometers, laser measurements, and so on to do things, that's not the way that the Torah insists that we do it. Remember the yesod that we had, particularly, which started with our understanding of the whole discussion about the bracha that we make, the Birchas Hachama, which is astronomically speaking, a joke. I mean, none of it makes sense. Please mute just, thank you. So the truth is, of course, everything's a joke. Everything's approximation. I mean, look, we just had the We just had Kiddush Levana last night, according to some Peshittas, right? Now, the question is, when do we make that Kiddush Levana? We base it on the average molad, which has very little in common with the reality of when the moon is going to be visible. It just averages out. Because obviously, I mean, to get an accurate readout, we don't even have today, we don't have an accurate algorithm to give us an exact reading of how the moon is going to be. It's too complicated because of the center of gravity between the Earth and the moon. And variations, I mean, that's endless. So how in the world are you supposed to make these kind of measurements? Therefore, the Torah has to be megala, how loose we are allowed to be with measurements. We understand that the Torah was given to a primitive human that does not have tools to be able to do things in ways that would be impossible without the development over generations of tools that make new tools that make new tools that finally get us to being able to measure time to within 1 second every 12 billion years and so on. That takes a few thousand years of clock making. So anyway, so the thing is that we have a wonderful pasuk that tells us how loose we could be in measuring the relationship between a square and a circle. And it turns out that the Torah tells us we can rely on pi as having a value of 3. And there's a number of other remozim in that same pasuk, by the way, of interrelated measurements, which we'll see. And because of that, the Mishnah here teaches us, remember, this is consistent with Erevin, all the way back at the beginning, teaching us what type of amma we use and how the amma varies for various tzrachim. This is consistent with the idea of measurements as being very much part of Erevin, because it's part of the concept of space, which gets to Shabbos, and how exactly do we see the interrelated aspects of space, which once upon a time was not your kind of Euclidean geometry, where it's just like something you learn in school. And this was literally the way people would experience the world. One of the most powerful things that they could read to get a high was Euclid, because it gave them a sense of really having a connectedness to the world. And because of that, it was fundamental, even in Kabbalah and in the experience of Kabbalah and the different surahs and so on, which the Rambam even brings in Mor Nevuchim when he's talking about the experience of spirituality. Space is fundamental to all of these inyanim. So let us take a look now at the Gemara in our Mishnah, and we start today's daf really on Daf Yod Daled. This is the Mishnah we learned yesterday. So what we're going to do over here is we're going to talk about the different levels of roim, and then we're going to come and figure out how do we know that pi is 3 lahalacha. And then we'll do, as I promised yesterday, a little bit of fun to show how the Torah also tells us what the real value is of pi while we're at it, because, I mean, we wouldn't want to mislead people. So, tefach, Estigmar, you said if it's one tefach, then it can hold an ariach. How can one tefach hold an ariach if an ariach is a tefach umechza? And you're talking about construction. I mean, remember, the point over here is not I'm able to balance it. The point over here is that it looks like real construction. Obviously, I understand I can balance a 1.5 on a 1, but I can't build a real brick. I mean, it's not looking like something I could put a brick on and build it. Not so, says the Gemara. It does. Because once it is rochav, the Gemara asks, tefach, don't we need tefach umechza? But once it's rochav for one tefach, building always, when you're laying bricks, it always consists of slopping down some cement, putting the brick on the cement, and slopping down more cement, and so on, right? Well, you can certainly slop down, I mean, you're talking about one etzba on either side of tefach, you can slop down cement on that, put a brick on it, and now it'll actually be a tefach umechza. So we have one additional etzba on either side of cement, so it's a big deal. So malbin lebetina, that's why he's called it malbin. Malbin is the same word as levena. So you lay a brick on it, which is a one etzba on one side, one etzba on the other side, and now you've got a whole tefach umechza of a kaima, and that will hold it perfectly well. Omar Rabba Baravuna, this korah that we're talking about needs to be bria kidei lekabel ariach. That's true, but suppose, remember that the korah, we spoke about a korah that you can have on top using a bracket and sticking up above, and we said, well, we will use actually the various virtual mechitzas to make it a kosher korah. The bracket that holds up the korah, that's not part of this little game. In other words, you don't really have to be able to hold up the korah that is able to hold up an ariach. The korah per se has to look like it's a serious building. But the brackets that are holding up the korah, they can be made out of some kind of junk material that's not real. Because what we're talking about over here, remember, is it's all virtual. So the question is, at what point do we insist that the virtual should be real enough in your mind to form a proper hacker? I mean, the little brackets, people are going to notice if it's like too weak to be able to hold the Korah. I don't think so. The din is a din in the Korah. It wasn't a din in the entire way that the Korah is supported. So it says, which is a brilliant insight, at what point does the virtuality end? At what point are you going to have the takon of the Chachomim? Whereas Rav Chisda says, no, this is serious. I mean, it's got to be. The entire structure, Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh, need the support bracket or the Korah itself, both of them, need to be strong enough to hold a Korah plus the Ariach on the Korah. So the Korah needs to be strong enough for the Ariach. The bracket needs to be enough for the Korah and the Ariach. Omer of Sheshes. Suppose you want to be real smart and you put up a Korah and then you put a mat over the Korah and you think that, oh man, now I got it really good because now, you know, I go beyond the virtual, man. I got a serious mat over there. It looks like a real beautiful mechitza. And that's even better, right? But then after you put the mat over it, the mat only hangs down to within 3 tefachim of the ground, then you don't have anything. Then you don't have a Korah because you don't see a Korah. And as far as the mat is concerned, which you think is a mechitza, in this case it's not a mechitza because it's not connected to the ground. And the truth is, if you were magabia, it's shlosha, you can forget the whole thing because you don't have a Korah and you don't have a mechitza. You don't have a Korah, don't have a chasya, the Korah is covered. I don't see any Korah. You don't have a mechitza because this is a mechitza which is capable of having gidiyim bokein ba. Remember, we had this by sukkah as well. We're going to have a lot of inyanim throughout the mesechet here about sukkah. And we started, of course, with the machlokas of sukkah, with the inyanim of sukkah, with Rabbi Yehuda. And we continued on with the discussion of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about the sukkah. And now we're going to be talking also about mechitza shagidiyim bokein ba, which is considered to be not a real mechitza. This becomes a real problem, by the way, in people that make these sukkahs with the hanging mechitzas, of course. You have to make sure you don't have a mechitza shagidim bokim ba. Tana Rabbana, how about a different issue? How about utilizing lovut for your korah? We have a korah that's sticking out of one wall, but it doesn't get all the way to the other wall. Or suppose you have two korot. Each one of them sticks out of the opposite wall, but they don't meet in the middle. Well, again, you can use lovut. If it's less than 3 tefachim, you do not need to substitute another korah. This is fine. But once it's 3 tefachim away, then you would have to bring another korah. And of course, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel that we've seen before, he holds it's 4 tefachim. That's the issue, not 3 tefachim. Lovut is always 4 tefachim. So as long as it's within 4 tefachim, ein tzarich lavi korah acheret. But according to me, if it would be 4 tefachim, then it doesn't meet. Then you need another korah instead. The same thing would be true with other adjustments that are virtual adjustments, lahalacha, because this is a lovut adjustment, but then we have god adjustments as well, right? So suppose you've got two korot that are side by side. So you have twin korot. Together, they are capable of supporting and having the size to support the ariach. Problem is they're on different levels. So now what about there? So you have two korot. And they're matimot, lo bezukite le kabel ariach, lo bezukite le kabel ariach. It doesn't matter because even if they would be able, if they could be bekabel the ariach together, which is the tefach, you don't need to bring another korah. Vim lav tzarech lavi korachers. Whereas Rav Shimon Abel says, no, you could do even better than that. They do not have to be mekabel the ariach along its length. They could be mekabel the ariach around along its width, which means that if they're close enough that I could put the brick on its long end, which is shlosh tefachim, and it would be able to be supported by them, then that would also be good. So this is, of course, this gives you double the kula. And therefore, that could be mekabel ariach or ko shalosh shlosha, then it's also good. But if not, you'd have to bring a different korah. Now, how about if there are different levels? We've been talking only about the two dimensions over here. How about if we include the third dimension, One is high and one is low. Obviously, there would be no way to put the chorus in such a way that they could be Bekabel and Ariya. Says Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, but that's fine, because we have an additional virtual halacha, which allows us to be ro'in the Elyona as if it's Lamata, and the Tachtona if it's Lamala, but they do have to be defined first as suitable korod, which means they have to be within the range that allows them to be korot. So in other words, they need to be within 20 amos of the ground, and they need to be higher than Asorat Vachim, which is fine. I mean, that makes sense, because first we define something as a usable korah, then we can move it, but you can't move it to make it as something that is suitable for a korah. In terms of the details, whether it's strong enough, impressive enough, that's a different issue. So for that, virtual is all defining, if you hold of roi. So it would be fine. So, as long as the upper one is not more than Esri Maman, as long as the Tachtona is Lat Namata Me'asora. Says Abai, you know, it's very interesting because Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's got a rather famous father. His father is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda just said two things in our perek over here. One thing that he said was right up at the beginning. And what he said was, it's okay if a Korah is higher than 20 Amos, right? Now, this son of his is not really believing his father's psak, because he's saying it can't be l'mala mi'esrim. I mean, if he really held of his father, he would have to say even if it was l'mala mi'esrim. So obviously, he doesn't agree with his father. On the other hand, he does say ro'im, and that was Rabbi Yehuda's chiddush over here, that the dinim of the way that the Korah is supposed to impact you are also subject to a level of virtuality, and we do not actually need it to be strong enough. So for that, he does agree with his father, which is interesting, because he agrees with his father in terms of adjusting things psychologically, which is called roin. So I can virtually move it so that it becomes a perfect Korah, but he disagrees with him in another important thing, because Rabbi Yehuda said at the beginning of the parak that 20 amas is fine, whereas Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda holds that, no, it has to be within 20 amas, but if it's more than 20 amas, it is not fine. Okay, anyway, getting into the next stage where Rabbi Yehuda said it doesn't really matter whether it's stronger or not. Now, Rav Yehuda, not, of course, to be confused with Rabbi Yehuda himself, Rav Yehuda, remember, had the unfortunate position of being the tutor to Rav's son, Chia. And unfortunately for him, Rav used to listen in, and this was a terrible job. Anyway, so he was teaching, again, the Mishnah. We've had this numerous times, and he was teaching Chia bar Rav, and Rav was standing there, and he taught him the Mishnah, the way we have the Mishnah, Rechava Afa Pisha Eina Briya. And Rav said to him, no, that's wrong. Teach him Rechava and Briya. What? But Rav himself was quoted by Rabbi Loy as agreeing that it doesn't have to be Briya, that if it's, he says, if it's four tefachim wide, it doesn't have to be strong enough. Yeah, exactly. If it's four tefachim wide, we're not talking about four tefachim wide. In other words, yes, there is a point at which Rav says, I agree that you could say ro'in if it's also a very impressive Korah. So it's not just like a thin Korah, looks like a big board. Okay, so over there, it doesn't really have to be strong enough. But that's not what we're talking about over here. So that part works out just fine. Rechava arba ashani. And if, continues on Rabbi, now this seems to be completely unnecessary. Rabbi Yehuda said, all you need to do is adjust it in your mind, ro'in. And then he talks it out like he's talking to kindergarten kids, so that if it were made out of reeds, you pretend that it's made out of metal. Thank you. I mean, what's the point? What's he adding with that? My commercial on Damrin and ro'in? That's what you just said. I know how. But you see, there's a question. How far would you go with ro'in? Maybe ro'in has to take into consideration the material from which it's made. So in other words, if it's made out of a material which could conceivably be strong enough to hold that ariach, was a little bit more of it, whatever, if it was a stronger wood or something, but reeds? I mean, that like doesn't start. Like, can I actually adjust a reed to be made out of metal? Maybe I would think not. Maybe I would only be able to up the tensile strength in terms of the set of measurements of strengths of this particular material, not substitute steel for kamash. Kamash milan, you can even do that. So you might have thought, Kamashmana. Then it says if it's at an angle, then you can adjust it again virtually. Well, obviously, the same idea, no? I mean, that's just another Roian, Pshita. Ah, the Chiddush is like Rabbi Zeira. Ah, Rabbi Zeira says, you don't understand what we're talking about over here, man. We're talking about serious problems. We're talking about a case where the adjustment is going to leave you without the entire Korah, because what happened over here is that it is at an angle, it's crooked. But the thing is, the crooked part sticks out of the Mavui into the street. And what he's coming to tell me is that, okay, virtually take off the little bit that sticks into the street, okay? Is the supposed edge, I mean, is it really an edge? But pretend it's an edge because you virtually cut it off now. So that edge, is it within 3 tvachim of the wall? So then you can connect that edge to the wall, right? Mashengin, if it's not, so then you can't use lovud on that piece. Okay, that I understand. But, I mean, isn't that also pshita? So hanami pshita? No, it isn't pshita. Because it's all very nice to say that you can virtually, in your mind, cut off the edge, but the reality is that the piece is there. And that can lead to a situation where a person in the mavui, utilizing the mark of the korah above his head, is used to walking to the end of the mavui looking up at the korah. But then he'll be carrying out into the Rosh HaSaravim because the korah is jutting outside. So even though he will take off the korah in terms of the kashas of the korah, but it's still there and it misleads him. So you might think maybe in that case, we got to worry about his carrying it too far. That you do not. The next thing that we had is if it's shaped like a pole and it's round, then pretend that it's square. And how much are you allowed to pretend that it's square? Well, what we said is if pi equals 3, in other words, if you can get a string that is 3 tvachim around it, then you know that you have 1 tefach in width, and that would be fine, because then its diameter is 3. And you can rely on that. Now, where in the world do we get that from? Minanimile. I mean, this is telling us that we have a right to measure things in ways that we know are not accurate. So where does that come from? Well, actually, amazingly, it's a pasuk. So the Torah defines the way that Shlomo HaMelech made the water reservoir in the Beis HaMikdash. And he made what was called the Yam Shel Shlomo. So it was a virtual sea. And it stood on these beautiful bakar. Shtemesrei bakar. Very, very impressive kind of building. And it says in the pasuk like this, Vayas et hayam mutsak. So he had this, he actually... how do you say in English? Mutsak, cast. So he cast the yam, and it was 10 amot, misvato atzvato. So it had a diameter of 10 amot, and it was agol, saviv. It was round, and it was chamesh ba'amakomato, 5 amot high, and it would take a kav, a circumference of 30 amot to go around it. So if you took a string, which you use for the circumference, you'd be able to go around a diameter of 10 with a string of 30. Okay, so that is basically saying that pi equals 3, because pi times the diameter is, in this case, 30. So we have a right to rely on 3. Simple. So kav shoshim ba'amah yisovoto saviv. Wait a minute, but how about the thickness of the wall? I mean, you're not including the thickness of the wall. Armor of Papa, well, the thickness of the wall, I mean, it says in the Pasuk was like tiny, because the top of the wall was Svato Svat Perach Shoshantiv. It says it was so thin, it was like one of these rose-petaled cups, and that would mean it was like absolutely tiny. And it says, Dechliv Avyav Tefach Svatok Ba'asekos Perach Shoshan. Now, this is going to turn out to be more important than we think. So, again, the Gemara does all kinds of cute ways in which we get the information, and then we understand what to slice off, right? So this is what we're going to do throughout this entire piece. We're going to look at the pasuk, look at it very primitively, and then start analyzing each piece, what it would really mean. Now, one of the things that this pasuk is telling us is very important, because it's also giving us a volume measure. Now, this allows us to correlate volume with our pi equals 3, which also is very important, la halacha, as we'll see. So now what this means is that if it's got a very thin top and you're going to measure it around the top, the very tip comes up to a rose petal, so then you don't have to worry about it. What do you mean you don't have to worry about it? Well, that equals a heck of a lot of distance over the whole circumference. You can't just ignore that mashu. Yeah, you're right. You know what? Look, how did we measure the diameter? We measured the diameter from inside. So when the Torah is telling me the circumference, not talking about an actual practical way to measure the circumference, it's telling me that that diameter of 10, if I would measure it inside, I would find that it was 30 around the circumference. Of course, it's not talking about from the outside. So that makes it simple, right? So now, the problem is that we need to correlate this with the liquid measure. So now Rabbi Chiya, he said, if you analyze this, it turns out that the Yam of Shlomo held precisely 150 kosher mikvahs. Okay, now this leads us to breaking it down into the volume of the liquid measure. And we're going to do this in a very simple way, because it happens to be that the whole shear of a mikveh is based on a very simple measurement. The simple measurement is, what would it take water to be able to be in a container that a person can enter into, and it would cover his entire body? So again, that's all very theoretical, because obviously once the person goes into that container, then there's a different amount of water in it, right? But it's giving us, again, the theoretical measurements. So what we understand is, all right, let's take the average human and see what an average human can fit into. And it turns out that an average human can fit into a small container of 3 amos in height, which is about 6 feet, and 1 amah by 1 amah in its width and length. Okay, so then if that's the case, things are really pretty simple. Kidatanya. This all starts, okay, michte, mikveh kamahavi. How big is a mikveh? We know how big a mikveh is. A mikveh is 40 saw. Because, look, as the Braita said, and we had this before, remember in Shabbos, that virachat, the idea over here is the ishki tetsemi menu shikvat zera, virachat bamaim et kol bisaro. So first of all, when it says bamaim, it does not demand that he needs maim chaim like it would by a zov. So bamaim just means me mikvah. Kol bisaro means that he has to be at one time immersed in water shekol gufo olebehem, the amount of water that his entire body could have been enclosed by. Okay, what is that? That's 1 amah on 1 amah and a height of 3 amot. Now the Chachamim looked at that measurement and that equaled 40 saw. Okay, so now this allows us to measure the Yam Shel Shlomo very simply. Of course, we would have to ignore the fact that it's round. So let's pretend that we're talking about the Yam Shel Shlomo has a diameter of 10. Okay, we're used to making easy measurements of volume just using diameter, as long as we don't have to start worrying about R squared and stuff like that. That's too complicated. But if we can just talk about a diameter and pretend that it's a square, so then it's very simple, right? Because, I mean, it says over here it was 10 by 10 by 5. Okay, 10 by 10 by 5 is simple multiplication. So that gives us how much? 500 cubic amos, right? Simple. Assuming that it was square, of course. So in order to simplify that, let's assume it's square. All right, now let's split up those amot into the number of mikvahs that we've got and see if we end up with 450 mikvahs. Okay, so 300 square amot, cubic amot, obviously are 100 mikvahs, because each mikvah is 1 by 1 by 3, 3 cubic amot. So 300 gives us 100 mikvahs. Then we've got now another 150 amot. That gives us 50 mikvahs right there, right? Each one of which is 3. Multiply 3 times 50, and that gives us already the amount of 450. But then we don't need as much as the Yam Shel Shlomo, because, I mean, it would be enough to have 450 cubic amos, and that would already be 150 mikvahs, of each one of them being 3 cubic amos of water. Why the heck did we need such a measurement of 500 amot which of course we don't have because the Yamsha Shlomo was not a square. And that's exactly how we end up making everything work very, very simply. So why does the Braisa say it was only 150? What happened to the other 50 yamas that were left? Those were mikvahs too. We had like another not exact amount, but we had another 15 plus. Yeah, that would be in a square, obviously, where you multiply length times width times height, but we're not talking about a square. We're talking about the Yamsha Aser Shlomo, and the Yamsha Aser Shlomo was round, okay? Now, if it was round, then let's take a look at, again, what the Torah said, the interrelationship between the diameter of a square and the diameter of a circle, assuming that pi is 3, it makes life very easy, right? Because then it's a relationship of 3 to 4. So instead of multiplying length times width times height, all we need to do is change the one of those dimensions so that if it were 4, now it becomes 3. And that will change everything properly. So that means we end up with 1/4 more in the measurement of the square or the cube than we would in the measurement of a cylinder, which is what we have over here in the Yamsha Shlomo. That's all. So it's very simple. All you need to do is reduce the amount by 1/4. I mean, what we're calling 1/4, remember, always mean 1/4 of the total. So 1/4 of the total removed will equal the 3/4 that it's supposed to be. Okay, so then that would mean that the cylinder over here is actually, if it were a cube, and we would put a cylinder that fits directly into that cube, if we have pi equals 3, then we've made the difference of removing 1/4 of its content. So far, so good? Is this clear, everybody? Okay, so life is very simple when pi is 3. Okay, so let's do that. So now, that means that our original 500 amos, now, is we're going to reduce it by 1/4, right? So then let's reduce it very simply. Let's reduce it directly in terms of the mikvahs, because that'll be very simple. We started off, okay, we had the 400, and let's take that 400 that we originally had turned into mikvahs, and that we could take 400 of that, the original amos, and now we take them into 300 instead of 400. Okay, so 400 of them became 300. How many mikvahs are there in 300? Oh, that's simple. 300 is 100 mikvahs. Each one of them is 3 cubic amas, right? So this is first grade arithmetic. Okay. So now that means our original 400 out of the 500 is actually 300. Okay. So 400 equals 100 mikvahs. Now we have remaining 100. Okay. We have to reduce them by 1/4, which means what was once the other 100 of the 400 is now only 75. Right, it's 1/4 of the total. So it would have been 4, meaning 4 25s. Now it's only 3, meaning 3 25s. Okay, 3 25s is 75. Are you with me? Again, let's remember how we did this very simply. We originally took 500 cubic amas. Even Barnea should be able to figure this if he doesn't use his pencil, because that'll confuse him. Just use your mind. So again, we originally had 500, and we split them into mikvahs, right? By taking off the hundreds and making it easy to do. Okay, so let's take that original amount. So we had that, let's take our first 400 out of the 500. Yeah, but 400 is no longer 400, because what was once 4 is 3, because pi is 3 instead of the 4 sides of the square. It's only got 3 sides for all intents and purposes. So we reduced that to 100 mikvahs. So the first 500 became, really, the 400 out of the 500 became 300 mikvahs. Okay, then we had originally we had that 100 additional above the 500, the 400, because this was the 500. That 100 is also reduced in by 1/4. So 100 becomes 75, the same way that the 400 became 300. 75 amos, after we do that, divided by 3, because 3 cubic amos equals 1 mikvah. So 3 divided into the 75, then that gives us another 25 mikvahs. But wait a second. So then we only have 100 plus 25. That's 125. So then how did the Braita say that it held 150? Now we got problems. I mean, if we're going to take into consideration the fact that it's round, then it doesn't work out. Now, it turns out, gentlemen, that the volume measure is crucial to our understanding the construction of the Yam Shel Shlomo, not only to the fact that we can adjust our halachic requirements for a mikveh and so on accordingly. Why? Because the Pasuk left us very confused. The Pasuk spoke about the edge around the top being the thickness of a rose petal cup. But it didn't say how much of that top was the thickness of a rose petal cup. Was it the top amma? Was it the top two ammas? I mean, it says clearly in that same Pasuk that it was one tefach thick. Well, where was it one tefach thick, and where was it a rose petal thick? It turns out that that is crucial in understanding how it was made. It wasn't a cylinder. That's what's important. It was a Brita filter. So on the bottom, it was square, and on the top, it was cylindrical. Okay? So because of that, everything needs to be adjusted, and we'll see how we're medayik that from the Pasuk. So the Yam Shel Shlomo, the three bottom amot actually were square. So then that means up to the height of three amot, that was measured correctly, 3 by 10 by 10, right? It was a square of 10 by 10, and it was three high. That's 300 mikvah, the 100 mikvahs right there in the bottom, because that was 300 amas right there, cubic amot. The upper two amot, the two amot, were exactly 50 mikvahot, because they were two only that were pied, which were three. So had they been actually squared, they would have been exactly what we thought would have been total of 500. But as it is, they're 200, and then we have to take off 1/4 of the 200. Ha! Equals 150. 150 divided by 3 cubic amos per mikvah gives us exactly 50 mikvahs. So add 100 of the mikvahs to the bottom three and 50 mikvahs to the top two, and you come out with exactly what the Braita says, 150 mikvahot. We're doing the epicycles again. I mean, what are you doing? Where do you get this from? How do you know you have a right to do that and to adjust the Yam Shel Shlomo exactly that it should equal the amount you want it to be? Where'd you get it from? I mean, I understand. Look, I mean, the Pasuk itself is indicating that there was a change in the measurement between the Sfato, where we would be measuring the Kav Saviv, and the bottom, because it says the bottom was a Tefach. Okay, so I understand you can't say that it was the other direction, that the top was squared and the bottom was round. Because it says, Svato Agol, it says the rim was round, which is mashmah that only the rim was round. And that rim was the part that was thin, but how do you know how tall the rim was? I understand that when you're using units in a pasuk, so you're using the units of an amma. So then a pasuk that tells you something, you're meant to apply the units to it. But use the minimal unit. The minimal unit is one amma. So maybe it means it up to the top amma, it was square, and then the top amma was very beautiful. It was like this thin rose cup of one amma high. So maybe it was just ame achana, maybe it was just one amma that turned out to be round. No, says the Gemara. You see, now you understand why it gave us the liquid measurement. Why do you think that in that same pasuk, I was talking about the difference between the square part and the round part, it also mentioned that it held 2,000 bats. Now, 2,000 bats cannot fit into anything but a Yam Shel Shlomo, where it's not the unit, a single unit, it's a multiple unit. So it has to be basically what we said, two. Why? Because it's a pasuk. Figure out how much is a bat, okay? It says it held 2,000 bat. We know how much a bat is. A bat, it says beferish in the pasuk that a bat is 3 saw. Dichtiv, maaser bat min hakor. If you're taking maaser from one kor, then what you will have is a bat. Now, a kor is a measurement that we continue to use, and it was 30 saw. So if you're telling me if you take maaser from 30 saw, you have a bat of wine, so then that means that it's 3 saw. One bat is 3 saw. 1/10 of 30 saw, right? Okay, so then that means if it's going to be holding 2,000 baht, then that means it is holding how many saw? 6,000 saw. How many mikvahs of 40 saw fit into 6,000 saw? Precisely 150. Put all of the data together, and now the Pasuk is telling us precisely how the Yamshel Shlomo was constructed. So even though I didn't give you the exact measurements of how much is the Safa, but I did by letting you know how many mikvaot it held, and that's why it was so important for us to know the number of mikvaot. Beautiful. So the whole thing is like simple as pie. Huh. How do you like that? But wait, says the Gemara, what about in Divrei HaYomim? In Divrei HaYomim, it's very strange. It gives you the same Yamshel Shlomo, and there it says it holds 3,000 baht. How could it hold 3,000 baht if it holds 2,000 baht? So isn't that a farish astira in the Pasuk? Ah, that's telling us another important halacha. That is telling us that if you want to measure the difference between liquid containers and solid volume, and this, why would that be important to me? Well, first of all, it's important in the Mishnah and Kalim. Ha! You wouldn't want to do a day without Kalim, would you? So we're going to need that for Kalim, but in terms of your practical daily usage, this is very, very much an issue of doing business. So when somebody tells you, you get a prescription to take one heaping teaspoon of X, how much is a heaping teaspoon more than a even teaspoon? What's the word for the even teaspoon? I forgot. Mochuk in English. Huh?
Level.
Level. Thank you. Yeah. So what's the difference between a heaping teaspoon and a level teaspoon? Okay. The teaspoon is has a particular shape. So obviously it's going to have a particular relationship. Now, the Yamshel Shlomo also has a very peculiar shape, in which case it's also would seem to have a very special relationship. And that relationship is 3,000 to 2,000. So in other words, I'm able to pile up a solid, let's say I'm selling you grain, and I agree to provide a heaping container of X of grain, then that would mean that I'm agreeing to supply one third additional above the simple content of that container. So you see from there, says Abaye, Shma Mina, Haigucha Tiltahavi. So you see that an agreement of heaping is a relationship of an additional one third, meaning again, one half in the way we modernly talk about it, but one third of the total. There's a big machlokas we've shown him how to work this out in terms of general measurements, because this seems to be specifically the case of the Yamshel Shlomo, which we just indicated is weird. I mean, it's shaped in an extremely strange way because of its bottom and its top relationship. So this is a big machlokas, whether this is, again, a useful approximation, which is essentially the way that the Mishnah in Kalim that we're about to quote seems to view it, or whether in terms of exactitude, it would only be really halakhically exact in something that was shaped like Yamshel Shlomo, and then you'd have to make adjustments for other types of containers. Now, in the Mishnah in Kalim, that's exactly what it said. Remember, talked over there about Ashida, Teva, Migdal. Remember, the halakha was that something that is made out of wood, it needs to have a Beit Kibul, but it needs to be Mitaltel Malei V'Reikam. You need to be able to move it around. So because of that, what we said was that if you have something like a Shita Teva V'Migdal, or it's a basket, a Kaveret HaKash, or it's a Kaveret HaKanim, or it's a portable water reservoir that's used on ships, the Bor Svina Alexandrite, the halacha is over there, those, if they're too big, then they're not called Metalta Balivareka, and then they're not similar to Kash, to Tesak, and therefore they are not going to be Mekabel Tuma. So Avol Pishei Shlam Shulayim, even though they're perfectly well and they can hold things, they can sit flat, if they hold 40 saw of liquid content, which equals the equivalent of 2 kor of dry content, that's exactly the measurement. 2 kor is 60 saw. So you see that 60 saw to 40 saw is the interrelationship of dry measure to liquid measure. Then they are Torin, which is exactly this halacha that we learn out from the supposed contradiction between Divrei HaYomim and the story in Melacha, which is marvelous. I mean, it's just so beautiful. Now, again, if you take out your calculators or your phones, Then I can show you very beautifully. So just clear your calculator. And where does the Torah give us the actual value of pi in this very misleading 3-to-1 relationship, which obviously is only meant in the... What are you doing now? Yeah, thanks. So if you take a look, as Rabbanei was just showing us, if you take a look in the Pusik has a kri and a ksiv. And the kri is always the way you're meant to relate to it in terms of your mind. But the ksiv is the reality of the thing. And it does not say a kav. It says a kava. Okay, we got the message, Rabbanei. And a kava adds 5 to kav, which means that the Torah is saying the real value of pi is to the value I gave you here of 3, as a kava is to a kav. So in other words, it's really a value of 106 is the value that we said. That 106 has to be multiplied by the relationship of 111, which is kava, over 106. Multiply that times the measurement I gave you, and then you will get the real pi. So just do that. So take your calculator, multiply out the 3 times the 111. That's pretty easy to do. And then divide that by the value in the Pusik of 106. And that gives you... That's really very cute.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Did you mean the Menahane relay at the outset as how...
with
the source to not treat pi as an irrational number?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that before.
Yeah, la halacha, of course, yeah. Okay, excellent. So now we're ready for Sir Richard. Again, amazing. 2 times in one day, and he's going to give us a glorious...
One time was sort of, you know, ceremonial.
True, okay. So we'll only count it as one. Thank heavens, because otherwise those bills you've been sending for overtime have been outrageous. But okay, go ahead. I think you should go back to a little oatmeal in the morning, Rich. All right, so we talked about the korot in the previous Mishnah. This is a continuation of that Mishnah. And now let's talk about the lechis. So the korah that we spoke about was, like we said, how about the lechis? How big do they have to be? Well, they need to be 10 tefachim high, and as far as their width and so on, it could be anything, any amount at all. And here is where we finally meet Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah that we've been talking about so much, and he says, no, lechis have to be 3 tefachim in width. That was the Rabbi Yossi that we said Rabbi held of when it comes to chutzah. Now, what do you mean, lechayayin? Lechayayin? I thought, didn't we say that we only need one lechi? It was only Reb Eliezer who says you always need 2 lechis. Is this Mishnah basically giving us a stam Mishnah that we need 2 lechis? The Omer lechayayin being on? No. Lechayayin means lechis, you know, come on, lechis. Oh, yeah? So then when it said Korah in the first part of the Mishnah, it didn't say Korot, it said Korah. So now how come it says lechis? Come on, that's no good. Then it would have said the Korot have to be X and the lechis have to be Y. So Iachi Korot, it should say Korot and use the same explanation. Korot just mean, you know, Korot in the world. No, okay, fine. You're right. When it says lechis, it does mean Reb Eliezer, but it's not paskening like Reb Eliezer. It's saying, you remember we had the machlokas about lechis between Reb Eliezer, which Rachum said we don't need to, and he said you do. What are those lechis? Oh, those lechis are 10 tefachim high, and any kind of width, and that's what it's talking about. But when you say anything, I mean, obviously, if it's going to be a hecker, it can't, I mean, what does anything mean? I mean, it's got to have some kind of impact on you. Tani Rebbe Chiya, anything means it's even as thin as the chuta sarval. Remember, the chuta sarval is what you use around the neck to be able to pull your sweater tight around, what do we call it, a hood on the sweater tight. That's also good enough. It's noticeable. Okay, so now let's talk about making strange lechis, the way we talked about making strange korahs. Suppose you put your lechi halfway down your mavui instead of at the doorway. Well, you can use only the half in a monthly, obviously. Well, obviously, if I didn't make a monthly, I mean, I didn't do the deacon in the monthly for more than half. What do you have to tell me that? You're right. Sorry. Let me change that. What it meant to say was you do have half a monthly. Well, yeah, of course. Why wouldn't I have half a monthly? No. Because I would have thought that, look, you know, people are used to the idea that once you fixed up a mavoi with a lechi, that you're allowed to carry in that whole mavoi, so then probably they're going to end up carrying. And therefore, we should be gozer. No, you got to put the lechi up in the front, and otherwise you can't use it. So lechish dimati lishtamush mekulei kamashmalan, no. What you've got, and that's fine. Omar Rava, if you make a lechi for the mavoi, but you lifted it more, you lifted it three tefachim or more from the ground, or you took it away from the wall, three tefachim from the sidewall, you lost your lechi. Lo asava lo klum. And even Alibid Reb Shimon Gamliel, who says, well, but lovot is four, and I'm saying only three, so there should be no problem over there because it's lovot to the floor, not so. Because he only said that where lovot is dealing purely with the lovot question, so it's on top of a wall or something. But where you're dealing with the bottom of the wall, you have a practical issue where lovot is also complicated by the fact that you have a mechitza shagidi imbo kimbo. You can have a small kid that goes under the wall, and that essentially means it isn't doing much good, your wall. So that's true about the lechi as well. Once it would be three tefachim, even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, would be exactly the same. And kivan da'avi mechitza shagidim bokin bo, he would also agree that it's no good. By the way, what about the case that we had before, huh? Remember where you paneled your entire mavoi with lechis? And over there it said, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that it's okay if they're within four. How are you going to explain that? You've got gedim bokin bo. Well, you don't, do you? Because if you panel the wall, those gedim are going to hit their heads as soon as they try to be boken. Well, they ain't boken nowhere. So over there, of course, the bottom is the same as the top. But we're talking about over here in the front of the mavi where the gedim can come through. Okay. So now Reb Yossi says you need three tefachim. Om Reb Yossi, Om Reb Yira, Om Shmuel. Well, we don't paskin like Reb Yossi. We had this thing back in Shabbos that I'm sure has been driving you all crazy, which is Reb Yossi insisted that you're not allowed to make salt water on Shabbos, which means it's a problem making salad dressing. And we don't paskin like that either, just in case you were still bothered by that. So, Omale Ravuna Bar Chanina, you told us that about Reb Yossi, about the Hilmi, about the salt water. You never said that we don't paskin by Lichayayin. So where does that come from? So Rav Yosef said to him, what's the difference? I mean, the reason that we don't pass like him is because of the fact that Pligi Rabbanan Aleh, so we don't pass like him when they have a rabbim against him. But that's true here too about the Lechayayim. Omar Leh, no, it's not true at all. Because the case of the Lechayayim, where he says you need to have three, there's a very important backing to his Shita. Remember, we came out that Rebbe paskins that you need to have three. Where was that? That was in the famous case of the small chatzer that opened into the big chatzer. And we said that the difference between the two chatzerot needed to be exactly one amma, because that gave you three tefachim on one side and three tefachim on the other side, which provided the pasim for the chatzer. And otherwise, you wouldn't have been able to carry in either chatzer, but a Rebbe holds like Rebbe Yossi. Now, don't tell me that we're Rebbe paskins like Rebbe Yossi, that we're going to ignore Rebbe Yossi's psak. So it may be very, very different. So the halacha would be like him. Rav Rechumi says this over, but a little bit different, that Omer Rav Yehuda, Breder Shmuel Bar Shilat, Bishmei Durav, Ein halacha k'Rav Yossi lo b'Hilmi v'lo b'Lechayayin. And then they said to him, meaning to Rav Yehuda, Breder Shmuel Bar Shilat, is that what you said? Did you really say that? Me? Well, of course not. I never said that. What are you talking about? Lo, huh? Never said it. Amrit Lo. This is one of the ways that the Gemara talks about somebody who's been backed into a corner, realizes he's made a mistake, and then, no, I never said anything like that. Omar Ra, I swear to God, he said it. I heard him say it. He can't get out of this, man. Elohim, Omar Ra, he did say it. I learned it from him. Don't give me this stuff. I never said that. The reason he's changing his mind is because he realizes it was a big mistake. Because there's a klal that Rabbi Yossi, we pass like Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi, nimuko imo. And that's a klal that he is very, very good. Even though the Chachamim argue, he always can argue his way out of whatever they had throw at him. So what's the halacha? Now I'm really confused. Do we require three tefachim for a lechi or not? Look, don't ask what a halacha is when the whole world is doing something. Go and look what everybody's doing. Do you ever see anybody make a lechi after eat tefachim? No. So obviously, lechis are just anything. You rely on the way that everybody does things. And we have the same kind of discussion, in which actually some have this discussion referring to what bracha do you make on water, if you're drinking a drink of water. So it says over there in the Mishnah, Shotem Ayim Litzma'o, if you're drinking water because you're thirsty and not to take a pill with or something, so then you say, Shakol Nieh Bidvoro. And Rabbi Tarfon says, no, the right bracha to say on water is Borei Nefashot Rabot V'chasronan Al Kol Ma Sheberata, and that's what you say before the water. So Rav Chanan asked Abaya on that Mishnah, so what do we do the halacha? Says Abaya, hey, baby, you never went to kindergarten? Come on, just what do people do? People say a bracha of Shakol Nieh Bidvoro, and they use the other bracha for saying it after you drink the water, not before you drink the water, and that is what you should do. So this is a way in general to look at how it is that a halacha, which is used all the time, you don't sit around asking, so how do we really paskin?